where books are sold.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up in just a moment, we'll interview Fox and Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade. He is a co-host of one of the top-rated cable news TV shows. We'll talk with him in just a moment. First, thanks to everybody that made a contribution to WMNF over the past 10 days. We reached our goal, and thank you very much if you've made a contribution that really enables WMNF to keep going for another 4 months. And this announcement, as a public service, WMNF is offering free airtime for political candidates. We're giving up to 2 minutes of free airtime beginning right now for a message recorded by the candidates themselves. The message may include anything the candidate would like to say about why they should be elected to office. The candidate may also include contact information. This offer is open to any candidate, regardless of party, who's running statewide or locally, and who is on the ballot on November 6, 2018, in Hillsborough, Pinellas, Sarasota, Pasco, Polk, and Manatee counties. Candidates may record their messages right now at 813-238-8001, extension 115. We'll begin playing the messages back during the 11 a.m. hour tomorrow and be playing them back over the next 2 weeks. Any message over the two-minute limit will be edited to reduce the length. And again, the place to record a candidate's message is 813-238-8001, extension 115. All messages must be recorded by 9 a.m. on Tuesday, October 23rd. That's next week. Well, my guest today is Brian Kilmeade. He's a co-host on Fox and Friends, the highest-rated morning cable TV show. He also hosts a daily nationally syndicated radio program. Kilmeade will be speaking October 19th, that's this Friday, at Tampa's Jabe Theater at the Straz Center. It's his first-ever live show. It's entitled America Great from the Start. He's going to talk about his latest book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans, which he co-authored with Don Yeager. The authors credit the outcome at the Battle of New Orleans against the British as essential to the existence of the U.S. as we know it. Jackson was compelled to rely on a motley mix of regulars, militiamen, free blacks, slaves, Spanish, and French holdovers from the pre-American era, and that group included Indians and pirates to fight off the British. And despite the vast differences in language, ethnicity, national origin, race, social class, and countless other factors, the people who defended New Orleans recognized that what united them was stronger than what divided them, Kilmeade writes in his book. We're going to talk with Brian Kilmeade, the co-host of Fox and Friends. This interview was recorded yesterday, and here it is. Brian Kilmeade, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here.
No, I always appreciate you having me on. Can't wait to get to Tampa.
The weather should be pretty good. Let me ask you, you're on a book tour. You're going to be at the Jabe Theater at the Straz Center here in Tampa on Friday. The book is Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Let me just ask you, you're pretty busy. How much research went into writing this book?
Well, the first one took 20 years, George Washington's Secret Six. Thomas Jefferson Tripoli Pirates took 3. This took about 2.5. And I think probably the most enjoyable part of it is the research. The hardest part is thinning it out, for me anyway. So what you have to is probably the kindest people you ever meet in the world are these historians that just live to keep these stories alive. So they will spend a lot of time doing this, and they want to spread the passion of, whether in this case it's Andrew Jackson, the Hermitage, the Battle of New Orleans, New Orleans officials. You have a lot of these military historians. All of them together really helped me out. Unbelievable.
The Battle of New Orleans is significant because if the U.S. side had lost against the British, you say that the very existence of the country would not have happened.
Well, I mean, it's not just me. I have found quotes from the British and from Andrew Jackson. And even though the Treaty of Ghent was signed in the War of 1812 and 1815, they planned on taking New Orleans, holding it. The General Packenham, who was Wellington's brother-in-law, said, okay, listen, I know you don't want to fight. You just beat Napoleon, but do me a favor. If you do this, we will give you the governorship of New Orleans. And they knew that war was coming to an end, but they weren't. They had no plans on leaving because they have a long history of doing this.
This is a weekly test of the emergency alert system. WMNF is testing equipment that can quickly warn you in the event of an emergency. This is 88.5 WMNF HD Tampa, Community Conscious Radio. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
All to fight against the British. That's quite a crew.
Isn't it America? I mean, if I'm walking in the city now, and you know, you have relatives here in the city too. I mean, America is not made up of, we're all races, creeds, and colors. That's our strength. That's best symbolized with that force that Jackson put together in 3.5 weeks. In fact, it took him 45 minutes to beat the number one army in the world because Jackson could adapt strategies, and the British couldn't. And they loved fighting traditional wars. That's why they beat Napoleon. But they could not handle this guerrilla concept. They could not handle fighting people without uniforms. And they couldn't handle Americans who wanted to defend America as opposed to Brits who just wanted to dominate more areas and be imperialistic. And they, you know, a lot of these British soldiers would end up staying here because of the opportunity. It was very much a caste system back then. You're born where you are, and guess where you stayed. In America, Andrew Jackson epitomizes, he was an orphan at 13. He was penniless most of his life. He ends up being a lawyer, a senator, a congressman, a judge, a militia general, and a two-term president. I mean, if that isn't America, I don't know what is.
We're talking with Brian Kilmeade, who's the co-host of Fox and Friends, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. All right, so let me ask you a tough question, though. Could President Trump pull together a similar coalition today? Could he unite, let's say, Muslims, blacks, women, immigrants, and longtime residents of the U.S.? Does yeah. President... Go ahead.
I absolutely. I mean, number one, in the book, in the afterword, in the book, paperback, I asked what past presidents thought of Jackson, what they wanted to take from him. Why did FDR want to walk up the steps of the Hermitage before World War II? Why did Teddy Roosevelt write a biography of him? Why did Reagan study his, why did Lincoln study his works before he wrote his inaugural? Why did Reagan have to take a picture next to his statue? And what he did is, America's at its best when we're pushed to the brink. And we were pushed to the brink in 1812. We were pushed to the brink in 1776 and throughout the entire war. We were pushed to the brink in 2001, we thought. And I believe so in many cases. And I believe when we have to rally together, we will. We need something to rally around. And I think after this midterm election, I think things will calm down a little bit. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, it's really important. But the president right now is going around the country describing Democrats as members of a mob.
Well, he's actually recording what he's seeing. And, you know, he's seeing people... like Hillary Clinton, say, we will not be civil until we win an election. He's seeing that Eric Holder, we're not going to go low, we're going to kick him. He's seeing Maxine Waters say, to see a Trump official get in their face. He's seeing Ted Cruz try to have dinner with his wife. He's seeing Stephen.
Yeah, Brian, we're losing you. Brian, can you hear me? Hey, Brian. Up. Oh. All right, we're going to try to call him back. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Well, Brian, you got cut off just as you were telling us about all the attacks that Democrats have made on... You yourself were down in taking a train, I think, in New York just a week ago, and a bunch of two comedians came up and started harassing you in the train, right?
Same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing. Something very similar. You know, with people screaming at you because you don't agree with them, or they're trying to get some tape or content because everyone thinks they're a movie producer or a television director. So that's the type of situation we're in right now. And if I saw either way, if I saw Bernie Sanders supporters yelling at Hillary Clinton supporters, if I saw Trump supporters beating up on Sanders supporters or Hillary Clinton supporters, I'd feel just as outraged. Not talking about me, I'm talking about what I saw with Ted Cruz and Huckabee Sanders and Kristen Nielsen, Homeland Security Secretary. It's just out of control. Go ahead and debate. I mean, my goodness, Tucker Carlson has some on every night that doesn't agree with him. Why can't, you know, why is, I mean, there were couples who used to get married to each other. It didn't matter what their political sentiment was. Like, I don't understand why you cannot be friends with people that maybe politically you don't agree with. It's like Giant fans not wanting to hang out with Jet fans because of the sport that, because of the team they follow. It makes no sense.
No, I agree with that. But, you know, isn't it up to the president, though, to set a tone? I mean, he's been going after Dr. Ford on as he goes around the country making fun of Dr. Ford. Isn't it up to the president, though, not to punch down? And he is always going after people that have less power than he has.
Well, in a way, I actually don't, in Ford's case, yes. But in other cases, it's Elizabeth Warren. It's, you know, it is Senator Schumer. It is everybody, Cory Booker. It's everybody that he's going to be running against shortly. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, they don't have less power than he has. Technically, he has more power now. But you know, that's the way he does. He's always had success punching back at people. But as you know, if you Google it, when he went after Ford and said, where was, when did it happen? Where did it happen? How long ago did it happen? Who else was there? No eyewitnesses. When he did that and everyone started cheering, I came out the next day and I just said, you've been unbelievably composed and calculated about the whole thing. You sat back and said, we should hear her talk. You said there should be an investigation. I told the FBI to do it. And then in that speech, I felt like you blew it. And I said that on camera. You know, so I don't agree with everything he does, but in the big picture, 92% of his coverage, and no one argues with this, is negative. There's no way that 92% of what he does should be written up negative. So he's frustrated. And the guy is like Mike Tyson of politics. He wants to knock your head off.
Well, okay, so if it is 92%, you've got the number one morning show on cable, and I got to say that I think that most of your coverage of President Trump is very friendly. In fact, he retweets what you say. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe 92% is too much because Fox has a big audience, so could it be closer to 60%? I mean, if
I think it's like between 80 and 95, really, since he took office. And I think that if you flip around, you have no doubt that that number is correct. And it's almost like two different worlds. And I'll give you an example. The reason why Fox remains number one, in my humble opinion, is because the 6 to 9 is different from 9 to 11. From the 11 to 1 is different from 2, the Dana Perino show at 2, then Shepard Smith at 3, then Neil Cavuto at 4. Who has come out and said, I don't want an interview with Donald Trump, even if he begged me. Shepard Smith is not somebody that you would say is a right-wing firebrand. The 6 o'clock show is the number one news show for Brett Baer. Hasn't tilted right that I could tell. Britt Hume was his predecessor. 7 o'clock, Martha plays it up the middle, and I think that you have opinion shows 8, 9, 10, and at 11 is a great news show. My hope is at Fox, when they recast it, after all the turmoil that we've witnessed in every network for the last 5 years, when they recast it, they just said, we don't want people to have to flip around to get another opinion.
You talk about Tucker Carlson. When Tucker brings people on who are moderate or on the left, he brings them on to beat them up, doesn't he?
Well, you have an opportunity to beat him up.
Yeah, but he cuts him off. If he doesn't like where it's going, then he says, okay, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, I mean, what you do is have hard breaks in your ear, and it's really tough because you can only go so, you know this, because you're in the business.
Right.
You can only go so far with the breaks. That's the one problem I have with having three people every for 3 hours all the time. You want to get a follow-up question, but you're out of time. Sometimes I get two or three questions in with major figures, senators, congressmen, presidents, and you really can't do any. So there's always a time constraint. But, you know, he comes on, he wants his A block to be friction. I don't know if the host of MSNBC and CNN can honestly say that.
Okay, we're talking with Brian Kilmeade. He is the co-host of Fox and Friends, and he'll be at the Jabe Theater at the Strad Center in downtown Tampa this Friday night to talk about his new book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle.
But I just like to add one thing. With I'm going to be doing Friday, I'll take questions, and we'll talk politics if you want. But for the most part, it's America great from the start. And they'll take three history books, George Washington's Secret Six, Thomas Jefferson, Tripoli Pirates, and Andrew Jackson, Miracle of New Orleans, and talk about three periods in America's history. And just talk about maybe put a spotlight on them. And so many people ask me things online at book signings, and I'm saying, I don't have any time, because thankfully I have long lines in those cases. So I said, what if I just create my own event? And I thought Tampa would be the perfect place to come down. I love it. They seem to really like the books. So I just thought if I could just do one event one night for a couple of hours where people can come down, get a book, and ask a question and hear some positive stories about the country and get away from politics, that was my whole approach to it.
Well, I understand completely. Let me ask you one more question about Fox and Friends. A couple of weeks ago, Jason Chaffetz was on, and he was talking about the deep state, and he was talking about how the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, wasn't going to go after Hillary Clinton. And it seemed like everybody on the panel agreed that there was a deep state. And the suggestion was that Jeff Sessions was part of the deep state. Is that a fair reading of what I saw on your show?
You know, I don't remember the exact appearance, but Jason Chaffetz, that's the name of his book. And he was there for 6 years, 7 years, and he was chairman of oversight. So he saw it on the inside, and he felt frustrated when Republicans were in the minority, even when they were in the majority, because he felt as though when the IRS was hamstringing the Tea Party, when he saw problems, when he saw other problems with other situations, he felt as though he had no power in the White House, because the White House wanted to just put a stop to it and ignore it. And he felt as though when this White House got together with the Attorney General, they'd take an honest look. And he feels as though that Jeff Sessions has not exerted the power that most other attorney generals have.
But on that show, Chaffetz seemed to indicate that Jeff Sessions was part of the deep state, that he was too close.
He does. That's how he feels. He wrote about it specifically. He wrote about meetings he had with him, and where Jeff Sessions turned around and goes, I'm not going to pursue Hillary Clinton. I'm not saying he should or shouldn't, but he said that to Jason Chaffetz. Why wouldn't he write it?
Okay, so that's what Jason says in his book, but isn't it your job as a journalist on that panel to say Jeff Sessions, one of the most conservative U.S. senators in modern times, how could he possibly be part of the deep state and be close to Hillary Clinton? Because he's on the record saying bad things about Hillary Clinton.
That's a good point. I like that angle. I would also point out, too, that almost everyone in the Justice Department is not working for Jeff Sessions. There's a sense that the Justice Department is working against the president and Jeff Sessions, which is the point of the book. And I'm not going to tell someone what they witnessed is wrong.
Is it your job to be a cheerleader for conservatives like Jason Chaffetz, or is your job to be a journalist on Fox and Friends?
My job is to find out what Jason Chaffetz saw, understand what he witnessed, and then let's bring it to the forefront, what he offer his point of view. What I'm seeing nonstop is a Justice Department. What I'm witnessing is a Justice Department working against the White House. And when somebody tells me I was there and this is what I saw, I'm interested in hearing his point of view. Just like, for example, when Donna Brazile was on with me and she was talking about her book and what she saw and what she saw the Russians did. My goal is to get as much out of her as possible. And when my story that I witnessed overlaps with hers, be able to challenge it. And when she wrote this other book about getting African American women involved in politics, I was just on with the Five with her. We did a whole series of questions on that too. When Juan Williams just came on, I don't know if you hear my radio show. Juan Williams just came on, and his book is just destroying Donald Trump. But I want to get his point of view. I let him talk. I counter. We have a give and take. But my point is, for my audience, I also want them to make a judgment.
What's the toughest question you think you've ever asked President Trump?
I said, you said before that you admit when you're wrong. Can you remember looking back at a time and saying, I wish I could redo that again? When you said that I was critical of somebody who was critical of me, and it turns out I was wrong. I would say another question I asked him, I told him flat out when he went after Megyn Kelly and said that her ratings were bad, she's overrated. I said, she's not, and they aren't. When he said that George Bush was an inside job, that he knew about 9/11 ahead of time, I said that is flat out wrong, and it's not going to be the case. When Glenn Beck came out and said that Barack Obama is a racist, I said that can't be true. It's not true. Almost everyone around him is white. And you guys can go Google that up and look on YouTube. It's all there.
Are there any questions that you wouldn't ask President Trump?
None. And the thing about him, if you watch Leslie Stahl, if you watch his Thursday, his Friday interview, his interview with the New Yorker, He doesn't mind hard questions. I mean, Barack Obama would take one question and take 20 minutes to answer it. And when he decided to interrupt, Brett Baer was skewered. How? You don't respect the presidency. Did anyone see Leslie Stahl last night? Her decision was to cut him off every time. And made fireworks. He's not angry. But that doesn't mean she's a bad journalist. Doesn't mean she's a good journalist. It means that she decided, despite him being president, I'm cutting him off. I would challenge her to cut off Barack Obama when he filibustered every single answer. He's remarkably talented, unbelievably charismatic, handsome, poised, that people dream of, but he never answered a question.
Last night, President Trump was asked about global warming, and he said some scientists say it doesn't exist. He's got the best scientists around on his staff. Why do you think he doesn't ask them?
You have to ask him. I would say that I spoke to Greg Wrightstone. I've spoken to others, really intelligent people, who see the politics involved with global warming, climate change, and they don't believe everything that people are saying are without politics. And I think there's an intelligent way to approach the environment without destroying the economy. And I think that's basically what he's saying. Climate change is happening. I thought Marco Rubio put it great. Marco Rubio says, there's climate change, and we should do what we can to stop it. But remember, we're a country, not a planet. We can always do what we can do. We're already doing more than absolutely everybody else. And for us to write checks to other nations who pledge to do certain things on the environment, to me, is not the best deal possible. Could he have went in and made a Paris deal more Trumpian instead of ripping it up? Sure. But I never read the Paris Accord. I'm sure you didn't, but maybe the overview. But the deal was ridiculed by a lot of people. And the president went in and signed it. It would have hamstring. Now, you know that China and Russia are not going to hear any of this stuff. And the president got elected by putting America first. If you don't want him here for 4 more years, you're going to have a shot in 2 years. You want to send him a message in 2.5 weeks, send him a message. That's what all your listeners in Tampa are going to be saying and around the country.
Yeah.
They have an opportunity.
That's for sure.
Do it again.
China is spending a whole lot on rail. Places like Western Europe are spending a whole lot on solar and electric cars. I mean, there are countries that are doing better on us. And when it comes to saving energy, you actually save money. When you have an electric car, over the long run, it saves money. When you put solar on your roof, it saves money. So you don't have to look at it as fighting climate change. You can look at it from the purely business perspective that you're saving energy costs.
And if you could do it, and then there's a lot of people so much smarter than me in the environment, you sound like one of them. So I'm not going to touch your knowledge. I'm not going to challenge it. I will say this. I would love to get the capitalist free market principles into clean energy. And it's beginning. The Solyndras of the world, the make work projects, the agenda projects only turn people off and make people dig in and say, I told you so. So I love the fact that natural gas burns clean. And that we are now the Saudi Arabia of natural gas and oil, but I love to see our economy do something. I love to do something in a way that doesn't hurt us worse than everybody else.
You're listening to an interview with Brian Kilmeade, who is the co-host of Fox and Friends on the Fox News Network, and this is WMNF in Tampa.
Because we happen to be more successful, more industrious, more productive. We can do that and still take a lead.
Brian,
I'm not prepared to be Al Gore, and I'm not going to write a counterbook to Al Gore. I'm not going to endorse his book. That's not an area of my expertise.
So, Brian, how much responsibility do you feel knowing that the president watches you every morning? How much responsibility do you feel to adhere to the facts, to be well-read, and to give the president the best information you can when he wakes up and turns on your station or turns on your channel, rather?
I think I told the Hollywood Reporter this. I whatever you think of my show and my radio show, the 3-hour radio show right after, I study throughout the afternoon. I study 2 hours at night. I am working the most productive. If you work in the morning, everybody listening right now works in the morning now. I'm the most productive between 3 a.m. and 6. Then throughout the show, we're rolling with information. And then throughout the 3-hour radio show, I'm interviewing the most important people in the world. I would put my knowledge and depth of knowledge and ability to ask a smart question with anybody's. But it would be the same question I would ask if it was President Hillary Clinton or George Bush. Is that what the reason why people say that he watches our show is because he was on our show every week for about 7 years. And the reason why our show was successful before him is we were covering the topics that so-called flyover country in Florida might be to some flyover country, not to us, is that we were discussing things that were outside Washington, Los Angeles, and New York, and he got that. And he understood it. And then he brought his case to the people. And that's where he got the crowds in Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And, of course, he went to the red states where he's going to get big crowds. But he went and said the working class is being underserved and Hollywood's being overserved. So we approach it from that direction. I'm always trying to be responsible. If you Google my name, 90% of it's negative. And if you make a mistake or misinterpret it, you also have a bunch of people want to take you down. Well, you don't make a mistake and you go, that clearly is somebody who just doesn't like it. So I don't feel extra responsibility more than I do for my own company. But I'm able to hold on to the job for 20 years. So I think I'm doing good enough to hold on, and I always try to do better.
Brian, if Hillary Clinton came on your show, would you be as easy on her as you are on President Trump?
Now, that's your interpretation, easy. I think my goal is to get as much information as possible to the people and watch my interviews. Hillary Clinton came on the show, she would probably punt half the questions.
Okay. I think that sometimes stuff goes by when President Trump says it, and the three of you sit there and you just nod your head in agreement. I'm sorry to say that, but...
You can say it. You're wrong, but you could say whatever you want.
Okay. All right. So what newspapers do you read every day?
What is that, a Sarah Palin question?
I
first start up with the Drudge Report. Then I go to Daily Beast. Then I make sure to go to Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal. Once in a while, I break open the Post. Then I will go to Newsday once in a while. I'll grab some articles that of interest sometimes. And then it's Daily Caller, Mediaite for the best collection. There's TV Newser on top of that. And then what I do every morning is I get this collection of newspaper articles and things that happen overnight, as well as the best sound bites around the country. So I really have an unfair advantage, but I appreciate it. Appreciate the knowledge.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. I'm just wondering, I was down in Tampa at the president's rally where folks in the audience were screaming at reporters. And I've been to 4 or 5 Trump rallies. Every time the president points to us in the press pen or the holding area and talks about us as being the enemy and all that. You talked about Andrew Jackson bringing the country together to defeat the British, but... You know, the president doesn't like independent press. He'll come on your show, but if you're independent of the president, he doesn't like you.
Yeah, I understand why you say that, but I think it's a little bit of simplification. And one thing that I have, he came on my radio show, I think 6 months ago, and he said what I just said to you. I just labeled it the 5 things off the top, and I was critical. That was just off the top of my head. He said to me, Brian, he goes, you hit me, but you're fair. What he wants is be critical when it's deserved. But when you do every single thing, when you listen to him talk every day and grab one thing and pound it into the ground, that's when he says, this is ridiculous. And that's when he fights. And you might not like that he fights. I don't love, that's not what I do. That's not what you do. That's not what Obama did, Clinton, or Bush did. Bush would never take out a network. I don't think George Bush watched cable. I really don't. Because I'd introduce him to people. He wouldn't even know who they are. And these are prominent people. He just did his job. But this guy is different. And I think that one thing everyone can learn is, instead of trying to compare him to other presidents, just say, maybe it was time to do some things different. To go, we don't need Canada and NAFTA. What do you mean you don't need Canada? Well, of course you need the great... You know what? The EU's been getting away with it too long. Well, does he mean that word? Yeah, he means what he says as part of a negotiation. We just saw it with NAFTA. You know, with China, they're not ready to talk. Everyone's panicking. The market's going down. But what is his goal? To get him to stop stealing our intellectual property, to get him to balance out our trade, to make our business executives stop selling out to the last buck, to breaking things down once and for all before it's too late, not so the Trump organization gets bigger and richer, but because we get better and more economically solvent.
But, Brian, you know, you talk about the working class, and I think those are goals that the working class has. But yet I haven't seen a single American factory shut down in China or Mexico or Vietnam and move back to the U.S. I haven't seen wages go up. You know, Bernie Sanders was complaining about Amazon, so Amazon raised its wages. But overall, most workers in the country have not seen a wage increase. And more people are falling through the cracks when it comes to health care. So if you ask the average person who's in Cleveland, or
we're going to find out. Listen, we're going to find out. The wages have gone up, but you don't want to acknowledge that. You're right about health care. Absolutely. Health care is when they're absolutely vulnerable, so is the president. Disaster. For him to let the story get out, or whether it's true or not, about pre-existing conditions, is detrimental to his personal survival. Everybody, that's a kitchen table. That's not a party issue. But about wages, jobs, and manufacturing, the numbers will bear out that they are coming back and things are more vibrant. And if they're not, he's not going to get reelected and he's going to get crushed in the midterms.
One last question about the president, then I'll let you go. I know you're busy, but the New York Times a few days ago reported that the president really wasn't as successful as he claims to be. He says he got $1 million loan from his dad, and from that he made his billions of dollars. The New York Times piece shows that that wasn't true. What did you think of that kind of journalism by the New York Times?
I'm not a tax attorney. I know almost no one paid attention to it. It's amazing how in-depth they'll go into one family, one president, one guy, although he did open it up by not releasing his taxes, so he kind of made everyone curious. But a lot of this stuff is plowed ground. I remember when he went bankrupt in the 90s, they started looking at his money and his solvency in those banks and lent him money, and he bounced all the way back. If I was him, I'd talk more about the struggles he's had. I would talk more about the bankruptcies he's gone through, because I would have humanized them. Hey, I tried to go big. It didn't work. I came back. I did this. It did work. This isn't working. I've been resilient. I've done it with my family on my side. I've sacrificed almost $1 billion to take this job where I'm not taking a penny. So I would focus on that, too.
But does it raise any questions about the president's honesty? I mean, leave those 5,000 lies that the New York Times has printed that the president has made aside. Are you concerned about the president's honesty? Does that ever... Do you ever, like, look at that New York Times story? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is that I'm just wondering if you were ever that curious when the Clintons were in office and when Hillary was running for 90 times in a row. Was anyone curious about everything that she was doing, that foundation, which ended up being just basically a way to get money and influence for when you gain power back? This is it. He got elected. Unelect him.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, you know, the president told his folks, look, I'm a successful businessman, I know how to do things,
yes.
and he turned $1 million loan into a billion-dollar empire.
All I can tell you is I've never done an international business deal. I've never bought a building. Now they're saying, Jared Kushner, isn't paying up taxes, but the way it works is different at that level. They're paying taxes along the way. I am not an accountant or an actuary. All I know is he's done pretty well, and his record is pretty strong. He's got over 200 of his accomplishments. 183 are significant. He's done a lot. I wish his tone was a little better. It would make his life easier. Let's see what happens. He's already modulated to a degree already.
Well, Jared Kushner hasn't paid his taxes, as we know from reporting over the weekend. And President Trump was a millionaire landlord by the time he was 3 years old.
Right.
Okay. Brian, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll see you this Friday at the Jabe Theater at the Straz Center in Tampa, talking about your new book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Brian, thanks for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here.
Go get him.
Brian Kilmeade, who is the co-host of Fox and Friends in the Morning on the Fox News Channel. You can find out more about his appearance in Tampa this Friday night at briankilmeade.com/tour. And this is WMNF in Tampa. So what did you think of what Mr. Kilmeade said? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Just looking at Wikipedia before I did that interview, in the 1990s, Brian was a sports reporter and co-hosted a sports radio show. He has 10 years of experience as a stand-up comedian, according to his listing on Wikipedia. And he continued in sports until 2006, when he filled in on Fox News Radio for Tony Snow, who had left to go to the White House.
And then he began his news career about then. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa, and let's open up the phone lines. Take your phone calls at 813-239-9663. Mr. Kilmeade has perhaps the most important person in the country watching his show every morning, according to news reports. President Trump watches that show. And let's go to Bo in Clearwater, who's been waiting a long time. Bo, what did you think of what Mr. Kilmeade had to say?
I thought it was very interesting, but, you know, he said that, you know, this country cannot get together. People can't marry people of different thought. Well, why would I want to marry a person that has the same thought process as Donald Trump? Puts down immigrants, is mean and evil to people, makes fun of a woman who's been sexually assaulted. This week is the anniversary of my wife's death to suicide. Her main concern right before she died, she was an immigrant from Costa Rica. Her main concern was that she thought the government was after her. Of course, she suffered from mental illness, but that was her main concern, that she thought the government was after her, even though she was a U.S. citizen. She got her citizenship.
So, well, was it the recent news about immigration and the president's crackdown on immigration that led to her suicide?
No, it was just the constant thought of people saying stuff, or the government, the way the government treats immigrants. And this is a loving woman who was the finest woman I've ever met in my life. And this is the way we're treating other human beings. So why would I want to have anything? I have cut off all relations with my Republican friends.
All right. Bo, I'm so sorry to hear about your wife. Thank you so much for your call.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Bo. Well, at one point in the book, which is called Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans, Kilmeade and his co-authors say that Andrew Jackson, was compelled to rely on a motley mix of regulars, militiamen, free blacks, slaves, Spanish and French holdovers from the pre-American era, Indians and pirates. And this was a group that he put together, Andrew Jackson put together, to fight for New Orleans, defend it against the British, and ultimately open up the Louisiana Territory and make it for the U.S. and not for the British. And so I asked him, I said, could President Trump pull together a modern version of that? Could he pull the country together? You know, the groups that are on the outs right now with him and his party, Muslims, blacks, women, immigrants, and then meld them with Republicans. And could he put together a coalition that might include liberals? I'm not sure I ever got the answer to that question. I let Brian speak because I wanted to hear what his answers were. I really gave him a lot of time. He said at the beginning he only wanted to do 10 minutes. Luckily, we got the interview up to about 30 minutes. That was good, and I thank him for his time. But there were several questions, I think, that were still outstanding that I never got clear answers to. But let's take your phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity, and let's go to Lynn in Sarasota. Hi, Lynn, you're on. What would you like to say?
Oh, well, first I wanted to say I think it's wrong to say this is the most important person in the country. Maybe he's the most well-known at the moment. Hopefully there's a more important person in existence.
But he's got his finger on the nuclear trigger. He has taken a lot of power on his own to, for instance, separate families at the border when they come to apply for asylum. You know, he's done a lot of things just, you know, by saying through presidential fiat. And he said, okay, we're going to do this. So, you know, what Fox and Friends tells him in the morning, that's why I kept asking Brian, how much research do you do? How much fact-checking do you do?
Answer your question.
Yeah, he didn't answer the question. But that's why I say that, you know, this guy Kilmeade, who comes to us from a sports background. You know, he has a really important position, and I wasn't, you know, what was your take on his answer to those questions?
He never answered them.
Yeah.
He either talked about himself or he talked about opposite issues or other politicians. I really think he is a master at doing that. And also, he gave a tremendous amount of misinformation about other countries and what they're doing with global warming.
Yeah, I don't, you know, Brian says he's not an expert on global warming, and he said he was not an expert on taxes. He sure had a lot of opinions about a lot of other stuff that he might not be an expert on. Like, I don't think that he's a trained historian, yet he's written a book about history. But I was surprised that he didn't know that when you reduce your energy costs, you actually strengthen your economy. Look at Germany, for example. They've reduced their energy costs, and they've strengthened their economy.
They're
not falling behind because they produce less pollution. So I wonder where Brian gets this idea. I think it does come from President Trump, that if you create less pollution, you have a less healthy economy. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, he was very down on China and Japan, and there's a lot of admirable things going on there. They're certainly feeding their children more nutritionally. It may be all financially motivated, economically motivated, but they're doing a lot of things to reduce costs that are unnecessary in the future.
Yeah. All right, Lynn, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Thank you. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Teresa in St. Pete. Hi, Teresa. What'd you think about what Brian had to say?
Well, you know, nothing I didn't expect. In the words of Emma Gomez, I call BS, but whatever. And what I wanted to say when he was talking about Leslie Stahl, I didn't see the interview, but I've seen clips of it. And he was saying how she interrupted him and she was rude or whatever, you know. And I got to thinking when President Obama was interviewed by Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, he cut him off. He was very rude to President Obama. So I'm like, you care why, you know? They did the same thing, so I think it's fine. So that's it. You know, they did the same thing to President Obama. So.
Okay. All right. Teresa,
yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right. So we're asking what you thought of what Brian Kilmeade had to say, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. Sound Guy writes this. He says, Brian Kilmeade had nothing but excuses, deflections, and cop-out answers. God bless the U.S. Justice Department. He's a sportscaster pretending to be a journalist, like the president is pretending to know what he's saying and doing, writes Sound Guy. Ryan writes this, I find it extremely telling that whenever people on the right don't have an answer, they go straight to talking about the Clintons. Yeah, you know, I certainly don't think the Clintons are perfect, and I think that they should be, their feet should be held to the fire. But right now, we don't have a Clinton president, we have a Trump president. So the person whose feet should be held to the fire right now is President Trump. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And Anonymous writes, Brian was a great guest. Okay, thank you for that. And Donald writes this, my biggest issue about the Fox reporter is why do they not ever criticize Trump for his lies? You heard Brian say that he thought that 92% of the media coverage of President Trump is bad. You know, I don't think that's true. Just look at, President Trump was in the Panhandle yesterday, and he was looking at the damage in Florida, and then he flew to Georgia and looked at the damage in Georgia. And I haven't read all the coverage, but I've read a lot of the coverage. And I thought the newspapers and the TV coverage that I did watch did not take any shots at the president. They just said, okay, he was here. He met with these people. He looked at the damage. He expressed empathy. And he left. So how is that negative? Well, what do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Leonard on Treasure Island. Leonard, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, yeah, I just caught the tail end of your interview. And, I mean, this guy, he's pretty slick. I think he's a lot slicker than Kellyanne, for sure. Seems to have an answer for everything. And then the answers he doesn't have, he gets through by, you know, going off on pivots and whatnot. But I don't think that Trump is the master negotiator, the master genius that everybody or on the right paints him out to be. I mean, that's kind of what I get from all of my Republican friends is that you don't know what he's thinking. This is all part of a strategy. I think that he is he's a narcissist. He's self-absorbed. I don't think he expected to win the election. And when they did get in there, you could tell they didn't expect to win. They didn't have a transition team in place. But he's there, and he is tough to work with. But I can tell you there are people around him that are using his personality to forward their own agendas. The only reason he has any kind of agenda is because the system is in place for the right have been promoting certain agenda, and they tell him that as long as he, falls in line with some key ideas, that he's going to be popular and people are going to love praises on him. And, you can see that when he goes to these rallies that are, of course, strategically placed in places where he gets a really warm welcome. He doesn't go to hostile territory ever.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Leonard. The president talks like he's a champion of the working class, but if you look at his cabinet, it's all high finance people, financiers who have not in the past shown any sort of connection to the working class. At least Bill Clinton had Robert Reich in there, who had some sympathy and empathy for the working class. But I can't think of a single person in the Trump administration that doesn't come from high finance, which leans against the working class. They want to extract as much money from the working class as they can. And if I had Kilmeade on for another hour, I could ask him some of these extra questions. But I don't think there is any member of the working class in the Trump administration.
Well, one more point before I get off. This recent tax legislation that he got through, I mean, my gosh, what a giveaway. You gave away money to people, the tax breaks to people who didn't need them in a time when, and put a hole in the budget, that we're going to be spending the next several decades trying to recover from. And of course, if Democrats ever get back in and they raise taxes, which they'll need to do to repair this hole, they're going to get blamed for raising taxes. So it's just a never-ending, a carousel where we keep coming back to the same thing again and again. The Republicans are going to go in there and change Washington and give everybody their money back, and then the Democrats go in there and they want to take your money and spend it on programs you don't need, which is wrong because we need these programs and we need the things that government does for us. We have a government over us to make our lives better. Government is there to make us safer and protect contracts and provide infrastructure. That's what government's for.
Yeah. All right, Leonard, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
All right. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, you're on WMNF.
Yes. I listened to the last few minutes of the interview. He never really answered a few questions that I heard you ask him. One thing also, too, when I see that people write about General Lee and Jackson, I don't really think they're taking into consideration what the Native indigenous people think or black people. Both of them have slaves. Both of them, one of them was the author of the Trail of Tears. And actually right now, I would say black people and indigenous people hated Jackson to the core. The ones that have done their who have education, who actually looked into what they've done, hate him. And even Lee right now was something about Lee on Facebook and the things that he had done. But the reason he's done those things is because he lost. He thought that if they won, then God wanted them to win, and then they would continue to do what they was doing to the black people. But since they lost, he changed his mind and said, oh, God wanted him to lose. So therefore, he felt that things should be different.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to ask about the bigger picture of Andrew Jackson. This was just about his book. Kilmeade's book is just about the Battle of New Orleans. But that question about how he treated Africans and how he treated indigenous nations right. Doesn't come up in the book. But you're right. Had I had Brian on longer, I would have asked him about that. Gino, thanks a lot.
You're right.
All right, great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. This is
WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Stay tuned. In the next hour, your hero, Mark Biro, will be here. Let's go to Nancy in St. Pete. Hi, Nancy. You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, gosh. I can't believe it. Okay. Okay. Where do you begin, right? I just wanted to say that...
Well, just take a small piece.
Whole thing that... what was his name? Frank, that wrote the book about, what's the matter with Kansas?
Right.
And his thing was the old Republican thing of I'm rubber, you're glue, whatever you say bounces off me and sticks onto you. That's his whole thing. That's their whole strategy, I think, right there. And so whenever they're talking about fake news, they're talking about themselves. They've got the fake news. We don't. You know, what we want to have is something that is looking for something that is a higher standard of living, and that's a quality of life that is for everybody, that seems to elude the people that want to say that people who are elite are shoving down their throats like it's not good for them or something, what they call values but don't live. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
All right, Nancy, thanks a lot. Okay. Thanks for getting through. Yeah. Let's go to Rob in Lutz. Rob, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Yeah, good morning, Rob. Yeah,
good morning.
Much of what you said was very good, and much of what Mr. Kilmeade said was very good. And I also think that you and Mark Biro coming up are just a fine testimonial. This interview you had with Kilmeade was a fine testimonial to the open-mindedness of WMNF and how they welcome opposite view and set it up into the forum for discussion. Hats off to both of you.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Thanks for saying that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Some people, though, are complaining. Simon sent in an email saying that a study found that Keith Olbermann and Ed Schultz had 92% to 93% negative coverage against Trump. Okay. I think that was actually what Keith Olbermann was. He wasn't really on the air when Trump was president. And Ed Schultz, unfortunately, has passed away. So, Simon, I'm not sure you've got the current numbers on that. But thanks for your email. I don't think there's any doubt that Keith Olbermann would have been, had he been on the air when Trump was president, pretty tough on President Trump. But I don't think it's true that 92% of what Keith Olbermann said about Trump was negative, because I think they took Keith Olbermann off the air before Trump was president. Thank you for that. Let's go to Julian, who's in Riverview. Julian, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Hello. He was sounding pretty deflated toward the end. I think you might have had him on the ropes.
Well, I think he was walking through New York, and I don't know where he was, but you could hear in the background there might have been a train or something. So he wasn't sitting at his desk. I think it's awfully hard to do an interview where you're pressed over and over again. I mean, maybe I had him on the ropes. I think basically he answered questions like President Trump would have answered the questions. He slid away. You know, if there was a direct question about President Trump, then he slid over to the Clintons.
Yeah, and he said he just wanted to do the 10 minutes, and you ended up getting him for the half hour, so I don't know. But he's going to the Straz, and I feel like he's just, there's like a trend among conservatives now to go into the lion's den, so to speak, and try to rile up liberals. Ben Shapiro is famous for it. but when you call them out on Trump and the rhetoric against Democrats, and his response was to list off all these examples of the mob mentality and everything. That only accounts for a very small percentage. Their rhetoric tries to make it out to be all liberals are.
Yeah, and you could create a list. You could create a list of mob attacks going back. I mean, I remember the Tea Party. And I was in the middle of a mob attack that the Tea Party carried out right here in Tampa, where they carried out an attack outside a meeting on health care. I mean, if you want to pile up the mob attacks, just think about what the KKK and neo-Nazis did in Charlottesville. just remember the pictures of that. Not just the killing of the woman, but the whole weekend. I mean, if you want to look at mob attacks, look at the New York Times coverage of Trump rallies. Julian, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11. Now stay tuned for your hero, Mark Bureau. This is WMNF Tampa.